grease, steel, cracked iron, and bayou grass. Sun's heading creekside, days fading fast. Are you really digging for peace, or is that just a lie you tell to help you sleep? Sure that.
Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire, and y'all, presumably still y'all, all are welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. Okay, it is, it is butthole o'clock Sunday morning, because I filmed this Saturday and forgot to turn my audio on. And I was a little emotionally spent after filming it once I got in the house and realized I had no audio. And it was just an hour and 20 minutes of a camera screen with me going. And it was just a little too much to take last night. So I said, you know, I'm going to have myself a couple glasses of whiskey. And indulging a little cannabis on the porch. Turn in, get myself a good night's sleep, and try again tomorrow. But sometimes the gods that be over at YouTube, sometimes they slow down the upload speeds. Usually when you need them not to. So we'll see if I get this up in time. It's kind of a crapshoot at this point. But I did jump up early to refilm it and try to get this thing all edited and put together and uploaded for you guys to enjoy today. There you go. Give me just a minute here. I did my greens. I do a drink in the morning. Had a little bit of juice and some greens powder in it because I don't eat enough vegetables, and leafy vegetables are kind of one of the things that really give me a lot of problems with Crohn's disease. Leafy vegetables will cause me a great deal of intestinal chaos and make me kind of sick. So I do this little greens powder, but in a hurry to get out here and get set up and such. Got a whole bunch of that greens juice in my mustache. And I don't know if you've ever possessed a fine sweeper of a mustache like this, but they're quite surprising in how much volume of moisture and liquid a mustache like this can hold. I've made the mistake of drinking my whiskey the wrong way on the stage and getting a little too deep a drink and getting the whiskey off in the mustache. And then when I go to do my next line on stage, it looks like a sprinkler just spraying whiskey out of my mustache. So it's, with great mustache comes great responsibility. And I got a great one. I mean, there's no doubting about that. I'm a humble guy, except when it comes to that stash. That's a bad stash. Anyway. Woo, moving along. Boy, I'm on one this morning. I watched that. Me and my wife were watching that Charlie Sheen documentary. And holy cow, I feel so much better about my life and the mistakes I've made. Like, God, and I own mine. This dude's over here just like, well, you know, if Nick Cage could have said, let's not go to the Hawaiian Tropics bikini contest, and then I wouldn't have had to break out of rehab. But I don't blame you. You should blame Nick. Nick didn't break out of rehab. Nick wasn't in rehab. You shouldn't blame Nick. Like, shut up, dude. I don't know. 45 minutes into him blaming it on NBC, a girl that died, I mean, just every, a little bit on his dad, just, it was everybody's fault except Charlie's. And then Sean Penn's junky rhetoric and wild metaphors just like was like the icing on the cake. I was like, oh my goodness, I am a better person than I realized I was. So there's that. Of course, there is all the other allegations about him and Corey Haim, but you know, the only person making that allegation is one dude, and then there's quite a lot of, seems like there's quite a lot of people saying that didn't happen. So I wish Corey Haim was around to tell us the truth. But I suspect none of us will ever know the truth about that. All right, so I'll cover it. It's Sunday. I spent, man, I'm sorry. How are y'all? Is everybody doing well today? I hope you're doing well today. And if you're not, I hope maybe you're doing a little better by the end of this. This is an episode of joy today. It's kind of, I actually sort of like the juxtaposition of this, the sun streaming through my window over here and lighting up the Wrecking Yard podcast canvas from behind. And it's giving me kind of a peaceful feeling. This is joyful. This is joyful. Got my little red Volkswagen Mouse. I got a smile on my face. This is a joyful occasion. This is joyful service on Sunday morning. And it'll be hopefully a joyful service for you guys Sunday evening. So many people, you know, we make the jokes and the allusions to sermons and church, and but I write like a preacher. These are the men that I watched growing up that captivated audiences and told great stories from good books, and I do find a lot of similarities with what we do here with Sunday service. I'll tell you that right now. So I was planning, when I was in Kilgore, I was going to go over Sunday morning, and I was going to go sit in the back pew of the First United Pentecostal Church there in Kilgore, Texas. And I was going to, I was just going to sit through a service, just smell the smells again, be in that place again. And I opted not to do that. I opted not to do it, not out of, it was not anything like, oh, I don't want to do that or anything, or I was feeling emotional about it or anything like that. It was just merely at that point kind of a time thing. I hurt my hip. Whenever I made my trip to Colorado, I come back, there's something wrong with my right hip. I imagine whatever's wrong with my right hip is sitting in a buckboard Mazda 3 for 16 hours at 48 years old. That's just my guess. I have a feeling it has something to do with that. So my hip's just really been aggravating me. Every time I go to get in that little Mazda, it aggravates me even worse. And even getting in and out of Rachel's Cadillac, it just aggravates the piss out of me. And so I'm going to break down this week, and I'm going to run over chiropractor. Let the chiropractor take a swing at it. I am one of those people. I've used chiropractors in the past. I don't know how you say it. Chiropractic work. Chiropractic. Is that a word? Probably not. I've used chiropractors in the past with some success. I don't think everything they do is for me, but I had a little chiropractor over in Montgomery County, and she was an ex-soccer player from Texas Tech, and she was about as big around as this little wire brush right here. I'm holding this little tiny wire brush in my hand, and that little old gal had a fire and a determination in her. She used to pop my leg out, and I'm telling you, my leg weighs more than her. And she'd grab it. I thought I had a hernia for a long time, but it was a hip flexor that was like aggravating me. And she retched into my skin like it was, like grabbed that hip flexor like it was a muscle band. And when it popped off my hip, the sound it made, and I could work, all of a sudden I could walk good again. So I've had some success with chiropractors. I used some of them after I fell off the roof and did some damage myself, alongside yoga and stuff to help me get my muscles back. But I'm also going to go see my general doctor. I got a colonoscopy coming up this week and a visit with my new cardiologist. And I don't have anything wrong. I'm checking myself all out this year. I'm making sure I've lost a bunch of weight. My body's changing and I'm exercising more. And I just want to know if I'm one of those people that might have one of those Widowmaker heart attacks. There's not a lot of heart disease runs in my family. My Papa Longmire had a couple heart attacks, but he also smoked 2 to 3 packs of cigarettes a day. And the doctors squarely placed the blame on that at the time. Nobody else in my family has had heart issues. That's just not something that runs in any of my genetic lineage that I know of. Doesn't seem like the Harrises have a lot of heart attacks. But I just want to know, my buddy had one of those Widowmaker heart attacks. My buddy Tim Schultz had one of those. And he said he was laying on the couch and it felt like his chest was on fire, like burning. And so he sat up, and he lived like a couple blocks away from UTMB in Galveston, big UT hospital. And so he just walked down to the emergency room, and they caught this damn Widowmaker heart attack in time and saved his life. But they're like, you have no idea how lucky you are, because most people do not get a warning. Anyways, I'm just getting things checked out this year. So I am going to make a visit with my regular doctor, get my hip looked at. But in the meantime, I'm going to run over to a chiropractor because I can get in there quick and let them pop me around and see if that doesn't help, if maybe I've just got some kind of strained muscle. I've looked up everything about the type of pain I'm having, and it doesn't seem like it's a bone thing. It seems like it's probably a muscle thing or a nerve thing in my back. And it could be from that damage I have falling off the roof. Could be from driving around a tiny ass little car just to prove I can. So, saying that, I was trying to get back to the point why I didn't go to church last Sunday. And it was really because after all the driving back and forth from Gladewater and all that stuff we had done, and Saturday tromping around out in the woods at the wrecking yard, I just wasn't feeling it. I woke up, my hip was in a lot of pain, and that hotel bed was like sleeping on this table. It was so hard. And I was just kind of miserable by the end of that trip, physically, pain-wise. And I was ready to get back home to Houston. And so we did do that. Unfortunately, it sucks. I was going to go have lunch with my cousin and her husband, who I enjoy both of them. My cousin Amy, I've talked about her, very close to her. I was going to go have lunch with them, and I ended up having to cancel that. I just wasn't feeling it. I spent the better part of this week wrestling, not just with this episode, not wrestling, I'll just say processing. Last week was very emotional. There was a lot that happened. But I was also wrestling with how to do this episode. I have some footage to show y'all. I'm not going to bombard you with too much of it, but I'm going to drop some in as I'm talking for you to watch. And I'm not going to describe. I have a lot of audio listeners that will miss out on the videos I'm about to share with y'all. So I had to figure out how to take them on this trip with us. And I do hope some of you audio listeners pop over here on YouTube and watch some of the footage when you have a chance. So I'm going to try to describe to you what I was experiencing, so that you, those of you listening, maybe get a better feel for what's happening here. It's, I'm going to cover this right up front because I'm kind of It's a whole thing. If you're friends with me on Facebook or you follow me on Facebook, you probably already know about this or you may have seen me post about it. But we went to the post office to pick up boxes, packages, and we had a letter from the post office, and I got it here somewhere. I don't know what I've done with it because I actually, oh, it's right here. We got this very official letter from the Postmaster General and the United States Postal Inspection Service telling us that our entire post office was robbed. Now, there were no P.O. boxes available at post offices in my area of Houston where I live. So we got one over in River Oaks, which is kind of like the Richie Rich part of Houston. And it's a huge post office, but they had plenty of post P.O. boxes available. And we got one with them. So what happened is that whole post office got robbed. Somebody came there. They've got it all on camera. Multiple people came into the post office one evening, broke in, and they just started ripping open packages. And if they found something looked like maybe they could sell it on Marketplace or the Craigslist, if people still do that, they snatched it out of the packages. So we have a box here that looks like it's from an Amazon fulfillment service, and it looks like one of y'all sent some Hot Wheels for the drivendreams.org. I can't be sure that's what it was, but if any of y'all sent a box of Hot Wheels, please reach out to me. I don't have your name or anything or any way to track this. And I would like to be able to put your name. I know you tried to donate, and I'd like to put your name with my registry that I'm filling out when I do the donations for all these, because I think that's important. And what kind of lowlife steals Hot Wheels? You know, I don't know. People are going through desperate times, and I know I've done desperate stuff when I was broke and didn't have money. But God Almighty, I don't think I ever stole from a kid. That's diabolical. Anyway, so somebody broke in the post office. That package is the only one that got compromised. I didn't get any other Hot Wheels packages this week, but some people, and my good buddy Barry Laminack, y'all know Barry, y'all love Barry, I hope, as much as I do. Barry heard about it, immediately says, "Hey man, I'm gonna buy $100 worth of Hot Wheels to replace those." And man, that just shows you, that's why I love Barry. That's why I work with Barry. That's why I spend time with Barry. Barry's good people. That just another testament to the character of that man. And I thought that was really cool of him. But please, if those were the Hot Wheels you sent, please reach out to me. Last week, I loaded my family up and I traveled back behind the Pine Curtain to perform a couple nights in Gladewater, Texas. Gladewater is about 19 miles north of the unincorporated community of Leverage Chapel. Leverage Chapel, if you haven't talked, that's where the Wrecking Yard is. It's a very small, Leverage Chapel was originally a farming community, and there was also a Cherokee village about a mile southwest of it. And then December, I believe, of 1932, some black stuff started spewing forth from the ground. And East Texas, in itself, was irrevocably altered forever. I thought it was funny that I was looking up some stuff about Leverage Chapel, and the population count for the census said in 1987 there was 450 people in Leverage Chapel. And then the last time they did the census there in the year 2000, there was also 450 people in Leverage Chapel. I suspect they're not doing a very good count. But I don't know, 87 is about the time we moved. So I can't help but wonder if it was like 454 before 1987, and then they did the count after my family moved away from the wrecking yard. I don't know. That's stupid. But it did kind of tickle. 450 people. Because generally, when I describe Livers Chapel to people, I always say probably about 1,000 people, which shows I was heavily overestimating. I actually don't think I was. I think if you take the number of people in Livers Chapel who would fill out a census form versus the number of people that are there, I'm probably closer. I bet I'm closer. A lot of criminals. Livers Chapel, Texas. I don't spend much time in East Texas these days. As longtime watchers of this podcast know, the last time I went up there to perform was in an effort to see my father and try to do some restorative work to our relationship, not long after I started this podcast. I started this podcast on Father's Day of 2024, a little over a year ago, with the first episode being about a car my father owned, and it was mostly about him. It was about his Dodge Charger. It's crazy and more than a little overwhelming that I'm finishing up a book based off everything I wrote last year when I started this project. The idea that me sitting in my garage and telling stories about my life and the lives of my loved ones would draw the audience that it has is the idea that speaking these things would change the trajectory of my career and life, even some of my relationships, it seems silly, but that's what we've manifested here. Y'all in the past year have not only shared my wins and losses, but you've rode with me through my current life, my struggles as a father and as a son. You've shown up for me at the least expected moments, and every time you have, you've given me the fuel I needed to get to the next chapter. Making the book has been hard on me. It's taken pieces of me a little at a time and helped me see the wrecking yard from a variety of perspectives I couldn't have understood before. When I was making the podcast and recounting the story of my grief for my mother, and that got to be too difficult, I could back out of that timeline and just spend the next week telling stories about her when I was young and her little red VW. When you're working on the book, there's no backing out for a minute, and it's all in order. My life in order is not necessarily a happy tale. My redemption arc resembles a camshaft profile more than it does any conventional storytelling arcs. I suspect that's because life doesn't work like a storytelling arc for most people. There's no hero's journey. There's just a journey. Looking at my life in order, it is quite clear to me that it took me a lot longer to become a decent human being than it should have. And obviously, I still got miles to travel to get where I want to be. I still, you know, I'm still afflicted with the pettiness and stuff that we all carry. I'm no better than anybody else. I'm actively trying to be better about it. That's it. That's the only difference. I still experience feelings of rage and anger and sadness and pettiness and jealousy. I still experience every bit of that, but I try to keep a level head about how to respond to those feelings these days. I worried after watching the footage through my own cynical eyes that you would feel let down. You've heard me talk about this place with all the gusto of Yaknapatawpha County. I worried I'd built it up too much, that you would feel the way I did the first time I strolled the grounds of Graceland. And I was completely underwhelmed at the Palace of the King. The way I felt when I went overseas to do shows for the military and they took me to Saddam's castles and they were built with knockoff Home Depot supplies and fake marble. It was, I'm worried I built this place up too much in my mind and here. So I'm going to do my best to explain what I'm seeing in juxtaposition to the footage to help you see it not only with your own eyes, but through mine. And as important as the shows in Gladewater were, and they were, these were good shows. Gladewater's a hard place to market. First, let me tell you something. The Jackson's Theater in Gladewater, what this guy, what Jackson's doing, first of all, he is a delightful kook, and I love him. He's an Elvis impersonator and an actor, and he's been a dance teacher for years. Hell of a bartender. He's just an interesting guy. He's a guy who has spent his life in the entertainment industry, and he knows the things that make us tick as far as performers. And what he's doing with this theater is nothing short of remarkable. He's trying to make a real cultural a place to witness great art and great beauty. And he's including stand-up comedy in that. And that for that, I'm grateful. He's just a fantastic dude. I enjoyed working with him. The shows were important. I went the Friday night show. It's a hard place to market. There's not a lot going on in Gladewater. It's a very, very small town. I'm not sure there's anything else going on in Gladewater, to be honest with you. It's a difficult place to market. I knew going in that the Friday night shows were low attendance. I knew they don't usually do shows on Friday night there. There was a lot of factors in that. We just didn't sell enough tickets. That's really all it is. I'll just take that on the nose. But I knew that. I knew that on the drive up there. I knew that on the trip up. And we went up Thursday night, and we got checked into our hotel. And then took the kids swimming in the hotel pool. Had a good time. Friday, we got up, I went up, I worked out, and then we went and had lunch with my father and his wife and my sister. And that went okay as far as those things go. My father and his wife were supposed to come to the show Friday night, and I predicted it. I told my wife that they wouldn't be coming. And sure enough, about 45 minutes before showtime, we get a text from my father saying that they're not going to be able to make it. He was having a migraine or something, but it's just kind of become a pattern with him. And that's all right. It is what it is. Disappointed for sure. And I went on the way to that show. Junie, my oldest, wanted to come to the show, and my sister wanted to come to the show. So they rode with me Friday night, and we went over there, and there was 12 people at that show, two of them being my sister, my oldest child. And I think one of them may have also been an employee of the theater. But I have a thing about that. I've talked to y'all about that before. When I go do a show, I don't care if it's three people or 300, I really try to give those folks their money's worth. And then folks paid their money and they wanted to see a show. And so we had us a show. And I think Friday night's show was fantastic. It was an intimate setting, intimate crowd, and we had us a good time. Truth be known, I enjoyed Friday's show more than I enjoyed Saturday's show, which was packed. Saturday's show, we had a gangbusters of the crowd. And a lot of my family came, and it was a lot of fun, but sometimes those little intimate shows can be a better experience when you're writing and working on stuff. As important as those shows were, this past week was the result of months of organizing and a culminated effort to recover what is left of my mother's Volkswagen. The shows were a vehicle to make my visit financially possible and put me up there for a few days to do what I needed to do. So without further ado, buckle up and let's go visit my own personal Narnia for what most likely was my last visit. When I was a kid, I saw my mother's car all the time in the wrecking yard. It was But you have to remember, it's probably been 30 to 35 years since I actually laid my own eyes upon it. I knew the drivetrain was gone. I knew the pan would have been sacrificed to the high acidity soil beneath the pines. But I mostly marveled up front about how much of the wiring harness was still there. It surprised me. My father loved to pilfer a wiring harness. That's what the man did. Hey, my dad, if we went to a Volkswagen junkyard, he would walk out and pay for another $20 worth of wiring harness he stripped out of these Volkswagens. And then he would take these wiring harnesses and tape them up in his garage and label them and keep them separate. And I have no idea what he did with them all. But I hope they got in the hands of somebody that needed them, because somewhere out there is a beautifully organized set of wiring harnesses from a variety of Volkswagens. But he liked having those harnesses to work with when he was rewiring stuff and doing stuff. So I was so surprised that this car still had most of the wiring harnesses still in this car. I mean, that's about it. That's about it. The shifter. The shifter's in there. That tickled me. The steering wheel. The steering wheel and the dash, all that. We didn't, apparently, and I know there's one taillight missing. That taillight went on my Super Beetle Baja.
I'm just tickled pink about this, brother. Thank you so much. This is an amazing...
I don't know what happened to the trunk lid or the engine lid. I assume they were damaged in the wreck or got utilized for some other Volkswagen. That's all I can tell. I mean... Taking in, looking at this car with the eyes of when you're a kid, you don't understand the things I understand about cars and impacts that I do now. Taking in the damage of that car as an adult, the damage is catastrophic. I can't imagine how my mom survived that wreck. I think we basically figured out just the fact that she was short saved her life. She was 5'2". And she had her seatbelt on, and we think that's what saved her life, because the roof is so, none of this video is going to show just deeply enough how that roof is caved in to that car where her head should have been. Had it been somebody my height or my father's height, I mean, they would have just... They wouldn't have survived that accident, I don't believe.
I think nature is undefeated, bro.
The right rear quarter panel is about the only piece of steel that isn't crumpled a little bit from all the devastating impacts this car took. I don't know if I've ever told y'all this or if I did get back to y'all this. See, originally, I thought... we'll get into that a little bit. There's a portion of time where I just wandered around the car. We were waiting on my cousin Ricky. He was on his way. And I wasn't ready to look in the shop yet. I wasn't ready to go in Papa's shop. I had to brag on my cousin somewhere. Jimmy and I didn't grow up together. His dad and my aunt split when he was young, and he lived mostly with his dad and their people. And my people always spoke well of his dad. It was... Big Jim Tidwell and Little Jimmy was my cousin. And he was married to my Aunt Barbara Jean. I don't know Big Jim all that well, but my people spoke ill of plenty of people. They never spoke ill of Big Jim. That's what I know about him. And he was always nice to me when I was younger, well up on into my teenage years. Jimmy's about 8 or 9 years younger than me, which puts him about 8 or 9 years old when Papa Clark died. I found out, much to my surprise, he didn't really remember ever even meeting Papa, which blew my mind. He's now the steward of what was the old man's dream. And just doesn't even remember the guy. Which in my eyes, you know, Papa is such a bigger than life character. I'm just so, that really surprised me. It really surprised me. I had a hard time wrapping around my head around it. I mean, it makes sense. He was raised with his other family. And, you know, generally most of us, I think, growing up, if we had a two-parent family, we're probably spent more time around one parent's family. And though I spent plenty of time with the Longmires growing up, I would say I probably spent way more time with the Clarks and the McBrides growing up. My mom's people. How Jimmy came to own the Wrecking Yard is kind of... So after Papaw died, Granny's gambling got out of control. She was going in boats in Shreveport every night. She was blowing through her money as fast as she'd get her little check in. And then when that wasn't enough, she started going and getting these like payday style loans in town. And then she'd run over to Shreveport and gamble it away. And then usually my parents would bail her out of her financial woes at some point. But at some point, she started selling everything she could get someone to buy out of the Wrecking Yard. That's where most of the cars and most of the stuff went, usually for pennies on the dollar. If she could get somebody to come out there and buy something, she'd get them to buy it. And, you know, there was all these stories for years about all the stuff people stole out of the Wrecking Yard after Papaw died and before Papaw died. And, for example, that Volkswagen bus that she told me had been stolen. Well, around that time, her and Papaw were separated. They were fussing, fighting, weren't getting along. They separated. He'd went to live over at his pal Maurice's place in an RV. And then she tried to sell me his El Camino while he was in the hospital. So, sorry, I got an itch back here. It's driving me crazy. So here's what I really suspect. What I really suspect is nothing's ever been stolen out of that Wrecking Yard. That woman's been selling it off piecemeal to pay for her gambling issues all those years. And eventually my parents had to like intervene. And this is something y'all don't know. I actually, for a very short piece of time, owned that property and gave it up. Eventually, she sold the piece of land behind her house with a shop on it to Big Jim and Jimmy's dad. And he come out there. He put a real nice trailer house out there, modular home, whatever you want to call it, and put a pool in, cleaned up the whole area around the shop. And he put his house kind of off behind the shop in the woods there. And all that junk around the shop and Papaw Wiley's little house, they dismantled all that stuff. And they drug it up on the hill where that Volkswagen bus was and just sort of piled it off in the woods to get it out of their way, out of sight, out of mind, while they fixed their little piece of land up. There was plenty of clearing and work to do on their own little piece of land. And Jimmy used the shop, I think, mostly for storage. You'll see in the videos when we go in the shop, he's got a 53 Chevrolet in there, old 53 Chevrolet. And a few years later, so the Wrecking Yard originally, all these plots of lands are crazy shaped plots of land that my papaw bought. And they're like in triangles and weird trapezoids and stuff. And our little plot of land where our Jim Walters home was on was its own little plot, and it was a part of all the plots he bought. So, you know, now the Davidsons own that piece of land that our house is on, I found out. And Big Jim bought the road, the access road, and all the property going down to almost Granny's Road on the other side of her house that, like, meets up with Sexton Road. So all the road access Jim Tibwell owns now, and that's all his property. And Jimmy... my little cousin has put him a house out there right off the dirt road that goes to the shop, and he's graveled the road and done quite a bit of work on it to make it better. And he's got him a little nice place there for him and his family, and it's pretty cool. But my parents, at one point, Granny got so behind on property taxes that they were getting ready to take the property from her. And she was gambling and blowing through her money and all that sort of stuff. And so my mom, in an effort to save her from herself, went up there and made a deal with a local lawyer and bought all the property from Granny for $25. And that way Mom and Dad could keep up the property taxes, make sure the old woman had a place to live and didn't lose everything she owned. Because she was sure on a path to do that. Fast forward, my mom dies. I'm the next of kin. I'm her oldest child. And the property is going to go to me. And I let my dad talk. He didn't talk. He bullied me into turning it over to June, my grandmother. I didn't want to. That time I was going through all the stuff I was going through after my mother died, and I was having all the feelings about my grandmother and seeing her through new eyes after I realized what she had done to me. And most of my original plans when I found out that property was going to be mine involved renting a real big bulldozer and having it delivered to Route 2, Box 30AA, over to Texas. So that I could just bulldoze that house of evil that she lives in to the ground. I mean, I thought it would have been real cathartic as hell. My other plan involved a big, big can of kerosene and some bottle rockets. She burned our house down. Let me burn her house down, you know? Which, those kind of ideas aren't productive, and they're not good for anything, but we fall prey to flights of fancy when somebody has wronged us, and that was, those were my flights of fancy. I was going to end that place and everything that had happened there, very Forrest Gump style. But I let my father badgered me until I signed everything over to a lawyer and put it back in Granny's name. Which is just as well. I don't want to own anything in East Texas. But I love that Jimmy has it. That just makes me smile. I've known Jimmy mostly as an adult. I just like him a great deal. I think he's just really good people. I know he's good people. And Jimmy has watched the podcast since the very early days of the podcast. He may be a day one-er. I don't know. I was so surprised when I learned that he was watching. I didn't think anybody in my family would watch it. And he was out in West Texas working when I did the episode about Mom's Volkswagen. And he said, man, I knew in my heart that I had seen that car out there in, behind the shop off in the woods. He said, as soon as he came home, he said it was almost dark and he took off in the woods and his dad and his stepmom were like, where are you going? And he said, I was watching Little Jerry's podcast about his mom's Volkswagen and I feel like I seen it out there. And he hit me up there. He went out there in the dark, man, which that's a little sketch in the dark. There's a big old hole out there near that car that looks like any number of bobcats, panthers, jaguaronde could be living in it. But he sent me pictures the very next morning. Mom's car off in the woods, and I told y'all about it. I was gleefully excited. And then he said, you know, that car's yours if you want it. Which was just such a kind and magnanimous thing for him to do to me after hearing me talk about my mother's car. And a couple months later, remember I made the joke with y'all. I said, I don't know when my last dance with Volkswagen will be. Well, it turns out we're in the middle of it. A couple months later, he had his buddy with a backhoe pull it up by the shop out of the woods for me. Told me it was mine to come get. And I immediately started plotting on how to get it. I couldn't fathom that somehow the universe was giving me this gift back. I couldn't, the things that had to occur for that to happen, it felt like kismet, you know? I ain't got a lot of money to work with, so logistics are tricky to move a car. I don't have, the money you have left over after you get done paying to survive. I don't have that, whatever that is. I don't have that. 99% of my money goes into my family and our bills and trying to keep me and my wife's cars on the road. And whatever little bit we got left over, we usually do stuff for the kids or maybe a little thing for ourselves. But I don't have car building budget money. I just don't yet. I hope one day I do. I don't yet. I knew it was going to be tricky to move a car that has no chassis or anything. This is less than a roller. It's a shell. Y'all know I game with my cousin Ricky. The minute I told my cousin Ricky a car was up there, Ricky said, I got a flatbed trailer. I'll pull it down to Houston for you. Let's go get it. And I also know Ricky likes to do resale and stuff like that. And I have a garage full of garage sale stuff, tools, some equipment, furniture, stuff that could all be resold by somebody that took the time to do it. I don't have the time to do it, unfortunately. I am very busy. I work all the time. And I haven't had time. I've gone through it all, sort of organized it, but I don't have time to sit around and try to piecemeal sell it on eBay and such and all that kind of stuff. Ricky loves to do that stuff. He's very good at it. Ricky takes a great deal of pleasure in buying things cheap and reselling them for more than he bought them. He's very good at it. He's a hustler. I've always impressed with his... That man gets the best deals anybody you ever heard. He watches the estate sales. He does it all. So I said, Ricky, how about this? How about we'll meet up there. I'll help you load up the car. And then when you get time, you bring it down to my house in Houston. And once we unload it off that trailer, I'll load that trailer up with all this garage sale stuff. And there's some things worth some money in there. And you can take all those goodies home and resell them. And we both get a little something out of this. I get mom's old car that I can't afford to spend a bunch of money on. And you get a bunch of stuff that you can make some money on in the way that you're already good at making money on things. And Ricky was about it. He's like, hell yeah, let's do it. And the way these two young men came together to help me out. On a morning we were headed out to the rig yard, Jimmy texts me and tells me he's borrowed his buddy's backhoe to make it easier to lift this car and move this car around. And that's not, he drove over to his buddy's house, picks up his backhoe, and then drives a backhoe down who knows how many miles of back roads to get back to his house to help me out. And if you've ever driven a backhoe down a bumpy road, by God, you know what the man put himself through. Ricky, him and his family, was out in Dallas. They were coming back from Dallas Saturday morning. Ricky says, as soon as I get back from Dallas, me and Corby, his son, we'll load up the trailer and we'll head your way. Drove back from Dallas. Look, when I come back to Dallas, I don't want to do nothing. Dallas just, driving in Dallas, just, just sucks it out of me. But this dude drives back to Dallas, then loads his trailer up and comes over there to help me. I'm telling you, if my papa had watched us work together the way we did Saturday, he'd have been beaming the whole time. We're probably gonna put a V8 in. Three boys. Three cousins sharing a McBride bloodline. Four cousins, really, including Corby. That's two generations of boys with McBride bloodline that ain't ever worked together as men or adults. We still came together and made this happen in an hour or so. Ricky and Jimmy didn't even know each other. I didn't know that. I got blown away by that. Jimmy never met Aunt Pat or Uncle Ronnie or Nanny. So he didn't have that relationship with them. And I wasn't aware of that. I didn't know that they had not met each other until that day. I didn't even make introductions. I just assumed everybody knew each other. Dumbass me. But we fell into it. It was so damned harmonious, it took me back. These two men, my family, helping me honor my mother. She would have been tickled pink about all the attention over Sherry Kay. Papa would have patted me on the back for my bartering scheme. It's the old magic I learned from watching him. And I told them stories about the wrecking yard. They didn't know. I felt really connected to Papa the minute I walked down that dirt road. The minute I started walking towards his shop, I'm going to say this without trying to be braggadocious, but I feel like I'm carrying on part of his legacy in that I'm the storyteller now for those times. He was a fantastic storyteller. I was nervous. There was some anxiety. My granny still lives in that house. The house y'all keep seeing over through the trees, the red house, that she still lives in that house. Now, Jimmy lives right there beside her. He said he ain't seen her in 8 months. But I don't ever want to see her again. I have no wish to ever see that woman again. I have no wish to ever speak to her again. I was nervous being in that close of proximity to her. Y'all don't know, a few months back, she almost died. And she was in the hospital for a while. And I guess she survived it. Whatever she did to me, I don't want to see her again. Ever. I don't want to know the bitter, twisted old witch she has succumbed to being. I know some stuff she did to my Uncle Bobby's daughter, Rashonda, after he died in 2019, that tells me that she hasn't got any less who she was. There's evil in that house. It's so strong you can feel it. I can't. The thing that struck me the most about the video when I was going back watching them is I can't quit touching the car. And I don't know how to describe this to y'all, but every time I touch that car, it felt like a spark, like something was coming back to me. Like I'd been given something back. I had been given something, but something deeper than that. I couldn't quit touching the car. Watching her car rise in the air was spirit. If we hooked the chains up, watching her car rise in the air, it was spiritual. My heart was in my throat. I have this playlist I've made called Wrecking Yard Radio that I've been listening to while I work on the book and write these episodes. And it's just a collection of songs that kind of put me in the place. And a lot of them are modern songs and some of them are older songs. There's a lot of Paul Cawthon on there. Paul Cawthon has this gospel sort of East Texas. He's a Tyler boy. He has this gospel deep East Texas feel that suits my inner brain, that tickles the workings of my inner brain and makes it easier for me to write. There's a song by Paul Cawthon on there called "To Whom Do You Belong." It feels gospel. It's very heavy. And it's just a repetition of the phrase, "To whom do you belong?" And as that car rose up, the words of that song were booming in my mind. To whom do you belong? It was just, here's a big baritone. I was just hearing it in my head as that car rose up. I've been listening to that song on the way over there because I was having big feelings about who do I belong to. But as that car rose up, the words of that song were booming in my mind. My dad had canceled coming to my show the night before, the way he had the last time I came up there. I was wrestling with feelings about that. Wrestling with feelings, acknowledging the fact that he quit showing up for me after my mom died. Not financially. My dad has always helped me out financially. I would never say that he hasn't. I don't need it these days. But, you know, when me and Rachel were younger, first married, he helped us out number of times. He helped me out when I had my accident and helped us replace our air conditioner. But he quit showing up. He always liked problems that he could throw money at. Those are easy problems. but he quit showing up. And I've been in the hospital twice since my mother died with major injuries. And neither time did he get in his car and drive down to Houston 3 or 4 hours to check on his firstborn son. His dad didn't show up. I don't know why I expect him to. I don't know why I keep expecting him to be different. I don't know why. He's not giving me any reason to. When I tell you I look for his face every time I'm on stage, though, I mean it. I do. But he's never going to be there. And that's okay. That's okay. He's moved on with his life. He gave up on my mom. She died. He gave up on everything about her. He gave up on the record. He gave up on all that. He gave up on me. And that's okay. It really is. It was okay to sit with that and acknowledge that finally. I'm not saying it wasn't hard, but it's okay. I realized that my mom was what made him show up. Every family needs somebody that holds it together. For mom, there was Papaw Clark. Then there was mom. And now what's left of my family is scattered to the winds because the glue that held it all together is no longer there. And folks that aren't like y'all, folks that don't know the story, rush to tell me in the comments, this car is worthless. It's not even worth loading on the trailer. One dude said you should take that backhoe and give it a proper burial when I showed some pictures of it on Facebook. He didn't mean anything about it. He don't know the story. I know looking at that car, it's worthless. I know it's bad. I know I'm a car guy. I know the mountain of work ahead of me. I know there's nothing left, but I can't explain what it's worth to me. I can't explain other than to say I won't give up on her. I'm not giving up on her. To whom do you belong? You belong to me. To whom do I belong? I belong to my family now. I belong to Rachel and my children. I belong to y'all. Huh? But I don't belong to that place any longer. And I was having big feelings about that. And it's okay. It was a positive thing. I needed to let go. There comes a time in your life you got to let go of some things. I needed to let go. This trip was excellent for that. I could feel the place letting me go, telling me it was okay. There's still sadness. I told y'all there's sadness now that some of the anger's gone. But the sadness was even the fears of my grandmother and her BS. The sadness, it was being overwhelmed by joy at working with my cousins. Feeling that feeling of wrecking yard family again. Three good old boys just getting a job done out of love for me and my mama. Once she was on the trailer and strapped down, a piece of my soul felt settled. There was a relief. There was a big weight taken off my shoulders. There was a, everything's going to be all right. Every little thing is going to be all right. I sat on that trailer. Rachel snapped a picture of me, a photo of me sitting on the back of that trailer with that car. I was so happy. Ancient tales. There's a mythical bird called the phoenix. Sure, you've read about it. I read about it when I was very young, some of the mythology books. And it's a bird what can rebuild itself from ashes. It like flames out and then it can rebuild. It's reborn from its own ashes. And there's never been, this is crazy. I have a phoenix tattooed on my shoulder over here that this is a terrible drawing I made when I was younger and doing a lot of drugs and then hired an equally drug-addled tattoo artist to put on my shoulder. There's no better metaphor for the wrecking yard than the phoenix. Wrecking Yard is a good place for a phoenix. Hell, there was a lot of them there. I've seen so many things go there and then get rebirthed from that place. That little red Volkswagen hanging from that backhoe rising in the sky ahead of me, while the little rays of sun dance and create little points of light through the canopy of them pine trees. With the smell of the petrichor all around me invading my senses. Cool woods air blowing on me, and that car rising up like some red phoenix from the ashes. See, I thought when I was growing, I thought I was brought into the world in a place where nothing was really broken. It just hadn't been fixed yet. I just didn't realize growing up how broken we were. Now, I'm going to apologize because after this, the rest of my camera work is a little shaky. I need to get me one of them. There's this thing they make. Some of y'all probably know what it is. It's a gimbal or gimbal. A gimbal or a gimbal. It's a thing, and it holds your camera and keeps your camera steady while you ain't. And I need to get me one of those things for filming stuff like this. I don't do a lot of action filming, so it hasn't been a need until now. But it would be helpful for stuff like the Hot Wheels events and shit like that I want to capture. So the camera works a little shaky. Jimmy, my little cousin, graciously invited me to Wonder Papaw's shop and take as many mementos as I'd like. It was time to go back in Papaw's shop. I spent hours in this place as a kid. Walking back through those doors was like stepping into a time machine. The familiarity of the ghosts and diesel, oil and steel invading me. There's still physical echoes of me and Papaw in this place. My father. My father framed this shop when they built it. They cobbled together recycled corrugated steel panels to cover it, to sheathe it in. That's why they got so many holes in them. You could be in this shop in the middle of the day with no lights on, and it's just as bright as you want it to be. I didn't use any lights filming this because it was so lit in there through all the little holes. There's the hubcaps hanging from the rafters. This is a thing I remember well from my childhood. My pap always kept Lincoln and Cadillac and Buick hubcaps up there because he was a man of style and substance and appreciated a good, fine luxury car. And Jimmy was like, "You want those hubcaps?" And I said, "Well, I just want to take one. I want to leave them because eventually him and his dad are going to clean that place out and make it their own spot. And they've already started doing that. And you might want them hubcaps to look at now that you know the story behind them." So I just took one. I climbed up on that little yellow four-wheeler over there, and I didn't take the Cadillac hubcap because fuck Cadillac. I took the 63 Lincoln Continental hubcap, baby, because Cadillac kiss every bit of my ass. All from here through eternity, Cadillac kiss every bit of my ass. They lost a love. My old mini bike frame, you'll see in one of the shots. That's my old mini bike. I had a little Tecumseh engine on that mini bike, and I rode that thing all over that pasture and all over that wrecking yard, and now it lies rusting. And Jimmy offered it to me. I didn't take it, and probably shouldn't have. I don't need that, but it did tickle me to see it. It tickled me because for a long time it didn't have an engine, and I would just walk it around the wrecking yard. And then I found a seat for it, and I put a seat on it, and that made it a little better. And then I would walk it up the top of the hill and coast it down the hill. And then Papaw helped me put an engine on it one time. And then, boy, I was Diamond Jim then. Had that good Tecumseh motor. One of my toys from when I was a child, and this toy's got a weird story behind it, but I seen it, and I knew it when I saw it, but when Jimmy offered it to me, he said they had found it back off in the shop. But when I picked it up and felt the weight, it's a Tonka toy. It was called a Mighty T9. It was called a Mighty T9 Dozer. And they made this toy in the 70s. And they made a version of it in the 80s. This is the 70s version. It's just all steel. It's very heavy. And I don't know how many hours I spent holding on to this steel cage, bent over at the waist as a young child, bulldozing the wrecking yard driveway and bulldozing Granny's driveway. I don't know. It's a lot. But the funny thing is that's right before Mom has her wreck. And then Mom has her wreck, and I go live with Aunt Linda and Uncle Paul. And I don't remember ever playing with this toy again after that. And what I suspect is maybe the day that she had her wreck, this got left outside where I was playing. And then my dad or my papa seen it and throwed it off in the shop to deal with at a later time. And it got forgotten. It's all age. It's, you know, it's just coated in patina and rust, and all these people are like, you should restore it. You should do this. And I was like, no, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to fix it just like we would fix a piece of equipment in the wrecking yard, the way my people would do it. I'm going to take me a little wire brush such as this, and I'm going to lightly go over this thing, and I'm going to brush all this rust and dirt off. And when I get it cleaned up as good as I possibly can, that already looks cool. Oh, man, now you can see the Tonka sticker. And when I get it cleaned up as good as I possibly can, I'm going to rub it down with some boiled linseed oil, and then I'm gonna silicone treat these treads because they still got a little give to them. The rubber still feels good on them. They're not brittle yet. And I'm going to treat those treads, and I'm going to grease the wheels and get it back in functional condition, but still old and ugly. My people weren't paint job people. It'll be rebuilt in the way things would be rebuilt in the wrecking yard. And I think it's going to look really cool when I get done with it. And it's going to make an excellent conversation piece here for the studio. The Mighty T9 Bulldozer. Being back in that place, the little steel plates there is where they would sit me when I would play with my little cars, my little bulldozer and stuff. And Papa and Dad work on engines right outside that door. That's where I was sitting. Y'all have heard me tell a story about Papa blowing up that 352 engine out of that Ford Galaxy out there, the old Galaxy engine that the fuel pump diaphragm was leaking off in the crankcase. And Papa blew the valve covers off that thing, gave himself a big old bull on his ear. That's where I was sitting while that occurred, 4 to 5 feet away. That might be why I got hearing damage. Being back in that place one more time was needed. And I can never thank Jimmy enough for it. He will never, there's never anything I could say or do for him that would possibly convey my gratitude, other than to just tell y'all what a wonderful thing it was. I'm glad he's the steward of Papa's shop. I think it's appropriate. He's what that place needs now. It needs new life. That place needs new life. That needs Jimmy and his kids. That needs his family making that place something new with new memories and a new legacy. My mom used to really get on to me all the time when I was younger because I would talk all the time about, you know, once I got grown, I was going to move back to Kilgore and I was going to turn the wrecking yard into a real, real wrecking yard. We was going to make some big money and we were going to sell all the parts in East Texas. And by God, I was going to be the wrecking yard king of East Texas. That's what I was going to do. And my mom would get on to me. She's like, why do you want that old junky place? You need to make your own legacy, build your own shop, make your own land, make your own legacy.
And it occurred to me while I was there that I did exactly what she told me to do. I went and found my own family, and we have built our own legacy. I have built my own legacy here. This is my wrecking yard. I'm not a dealer of parts. I'm a dealer of hope. That's all I sell. I sell hope and repair. I don't sell negativity. I don't sell car parts, but I do sell hope and repair. I have created my own wrecking yard. I have created my own legacy. That place needs a new legacy. And I'm so happy my little cousin Jimmy's one that's going to give it to it. I hope maybe one day to go there and just visit Jimmy and just to see what he's done with the place. He's a good dude. We made the hike. I wanted to go up the hill. I wanted to go see where the old Volkswagen bus sat, where the giant wooden boat was. And we made the hike back into the woods and up the hill where the bus I played in as a child sat. Now, mostly in that area, you got shortleaf and loblolly pines. Those are two very specific type of pine trees. Loblolly pine trees tower 100 foot in the air. They're super, super tall. They got big old long pine needles, big old pine cones. Pine needles average like 8 to 12 inches in length, nearly a foot in length pine needles. The shortleaf pines, despite their name, still put out a pine needle that's 6 to 8 inches. And when those needles fall together in the forest, they lock amongst each other to create this sort of cushion on the ground between you and the soil. And I would talk about playing in the wrecking yard as a kid, and all day long you're walking on that bed of pine needles, and the deeper you get into the interior of the canopy, the deeper those needles get. Now those needles can be treacherous because they're a hiding spot for snakes and all kind of other nasty ne'er-do-wells that'd like to get a hold of some young flesh. But feeling my feet walking on that cushion again took me back. It grounded me and took me back to something as a child that just washed over me. Walking into the interior of the canopy of those trees, once you get into the canopy, the sun is no longer a concern. As harsh as the sun may beat, it's being blocked out so strong and at such a high altitude that it gives the air in the canopy time to cool. And so the air is cooler in there. I mean, it's still a little humid, but the air is cooler in there. The air is a little denser in there. The smell of pine is strong. You smell the resin that seeps from the trees. You can smell the decay of pine needles. It's got an acidic tang to it, almost like a battery. That feeling renewed. That was my place. This was my height. This specifically going up this hill, this was my place. I was the grand supreme king of everything on that hill. To see remnants of Papaw's treasures and plans still hiding in the pine needles. The old... you'll see at some point there's a 58 Ford Custom 300 front end. And I'm actually thinking about reaching out to Jimmy and his dad and just offering to buy that. I mean, it doesn't have a lot of value. They're not like high in demand. But I thought that one would be cool to have for, because eventually at some point we're going to move. I'm going to build a new studio. And I thought that would be a cool place for guests to wait before they come into the studio, would have that old 58 Ford Custom 300 mounted on the wall, that front end, that's some kind of wall hanging, be kind of neat. The old Apache that I sat in, you'll see it at some point, the old Apache, orange and upside down, doors torn off of it. Funny enough, though, that old 58 Apache still has a good windshield in it, even though it's upside down. And I know those wraparound windshields got to be hard to find. And I think Jimmy might should go take some pictures of that windshield and put it on eBay, because somebody would come out there and harvest that windshield, I believe. I could be wrong about that, but old glass is hard to find. It's a shame that truck got tore up, totaled like it is. It was all complete when I was a kid. I don't know what happened to it or why somebody decided it was of no value. It's none of my business. The boat trailer once held the giant wooden boat is still there. The boat long reclaimed by the earth. We found another Volkswagen floor pan up there. I think it came off like a 63. It's before McPherson struts. At the time, I didn't think it would be useful to me, but then as I've learned a little more about what goes into building a Volksrod, which is kind of what I'm thinking about doing in mom's car, like an open wheel type thing, it's better to do it with the earlier front end, the old torsion bar front end. So I may put one of those earlier generation. It's a lot of work. You got to cut everything out from under the bottom and weld it all back up in there. But, I mean, the state that this car is in, I'll just flip the damn thing over and do it. You know what I mean? Who cares? Or am I going to crush the roof? I don't know if I got the tricycle on video, but Rachel took this photo of it. We noticed it while walking through the woods, and it was wild to me. This dumb tricycle is now three very big moments in my life. This was my new tricycle when I was little. I was very proud of it. I already knew that new things were a scarcity in the wrecking yard at that age, but it was brand new, right from the Sears. Red, beautiful, shiny chrome wheels. And I would ride it up and down that wrecking yard road and in our yard. And I was constantly getting in trouble because I was leaving it out there in the road. And one day I left it behind Uncle Rolando's truck. Uncle Rolando was my Aunt Janet's first husband. Uncle Rolando's truck is the 1972 blue Ford F-100 that became my first truck. That before that was Uncle Bobby had owned the truck. Then Uncle Rolando bought it from him. Then I bought it from Aunt Janet. I left my tricycle behind that truck and Uncle Rolando accidentally backed over it. And that's why the wheel was all smashed and bent. And Uncle Rolando felt terrible. I cried and wailed and Uncle Rolando felt terrible because, you know, as anybody would feel in that situation, even though it wasn't his fault. And he wanted to do something about it. And my dad was like, no, you know, and Uncle Rolando left. And I kept crying and wailing about it. And my dad, in his characteristic manner, just started hollering at me. Well, this is what you get for leaving your things out there. I mean, I'm like 5 years old. And he's just railing me for leaving my stuff out. And this is why I told you to put it up and you get what you get type thing. And I know he's just trying to toughen me up and teach me something, I guess, in his own way there. But it's before my mom's wreck. It's before I've ever been through any big sadness in my life. And it's a big deal for a child. I remember the feelings. I remember crying over that tricycle and never getting another one. You know, just a year or two later, Papa drags me this Dukes of Hazzard bicycle out of a junk sale somewhere. My dad fixes it up. And then that was my bike. And then I moved to bikes. But some years later, when I was about 13 or so, and I was going through some stuff, y'all know that, I was out in the wrecking yard, and I was out behind Papa Wiley's house, and I found that tricycle behind Papa Wiley's house where it had been thrown. And I was reading Isaac Asimov and Ray Bradbury. I was reading heady shit for a teen. And it was the first time I realized that I was going to die one day. The rust had taken it. The rubber had dry rotted. I realized for the first time, I think it was the first time I understood that everything in the wrecking yard had been new at some time. It hadn't always been old. It was the first time I realized one day I would be old. My parts would fail. It scared the shit out of me. Pure terror. And I'm the one who threw it up on that hill off in the bushes so I wouldn't have to see it again. And then Saturday, we walked across it on our journey. And when I first set eyes upon it, I smiled. Existential terror did not arrive. I was there to say goodbye. Not goodbye to physical things, but fears, anger, emotions I can't name. I was happy to see that we were enduring, me and this three-wheeled piece of steel. I felt okay letting go. I took this little video for me, but I wanted to share it with y'all. Watching Ricky drive away with my mom's VW on that trailer was one of the, it was a happiness that I can't begin to put into just the boundaries of language. The feeling in my chest as that little car made its way up that hill to begin its journey to my home. To whom do you belong? You belong to me. Let's take a break there. Let's do some testimonials. And I got a package to unwrap that did not get stolen. And I'm super excited about. I like to unwrap things as a surprise here when I don't know what they are, if they're not Hot Wheels or whatever. So those packages that we don't know what they are, my wife will usually pre-open them for me, take the tape off, stuff like that, make it easier here. And, you know, so she gets to see it before me, and she's really excited about this. And I've been trying not to look at it because I don't want to see any clues to what it is, but she is ridiculously excited about me opening this. But let's do some testimonials first, and some testimonials, if you will. These are comments from last week's. Oh, I have these on my phone this week. These are comments from last week's episode where, I got a little preachy on y'all about my beliefs and such. And I felt like somebody had put me in a position that I didn't care for. And I spoke to that some.
Rhythm and, Energy's power shift plan.
Oops. Let's turn the sound off. That is the wrong app. Let's try again. And our old buddy, Texasipian, you're going to be shocked when you one day go to chase an intruder away naked with a hammer and find another naked man with a board and a nail. Hopefully Rachel doesn't read the comments and may give her an idea of how to finally get some things done around the house. Yeah, I don't know why the hammer is my go-to when there's an intruder, but they say you revert to the things you've mastered when it comes to fight or flight situations. So maybe I spent enough time as a carpenter and I haven't spent enough time firing my guns that I go to that hammer first every day, every time. I've run a number of intruders, real and possibly imagined, off with a sturdy S-wing hammer. It's got to be S-wing because it's the finest hammer they make. Y'all can take that Milwaukee crap and throw it away. Also, at Texasipian, I got your snail mail letter. I got your actual letter that you sent to the post office. And reading your words gave me a great deal of comfort and gratitude. I see you, brother. Thank you. At our buddy Cornbread Fred. Awesome episode like always. I'm not a day one-er, but I started listening after my children's mother left and needed something other than my normal sad country music. You really helped me get through this hard time. Thank you, JW. And I can't wait to see you in Louisville, Kentucky in October. Hey, buddy, thank you for that. Cornbread. I'm going to call you Cornbread Fred since I'm going to meet you. I'm looking forward to meeting you too, buddy. I'm looking forward to Louisville. I've said it before a bunch of times. Louisville is one of my favorite cities to go to in this great nation. I love doing shows in Louisville. I feel like my voice is at home there. I love doing shows in Louisville. I'm really looking forward to that show. I got to get off my ass and start marketing it. But I love to see my Wrecking Yard people at shows. Can't wait to meet you. I'm going to call you Cornbread Fred from here on because that's awesome. I like that name. Cornbread Fred. At Bug Driver 74, JW, you may not realize it, but you are a part of the solution. This is part of it, reminding us every week that people are people, and many of us are aiming at similar goals, just maybe have different ideas how to get there. I heard a thing that said it used to be sex sells before those selling figured out anger sells even better. You're right. We're being sold anger on both sides. Excellent show. Thank you for making a point to clarify your stance and feelings. And I can't wait for more Volkswagen stuff. I'll probably bother you with more thought-out suggestions on it in the future. You give me all the suggestions you want. Please do. The plan right now in my head is to build a interesting Volkswagen out of it. And part of that is because I already own a 5.3 LS engine with fairly low miles that I come across in some of my horse trading. And I think it would make an excellent power plant. I know it's an LS swap, but I'm a basic bitch, so I'm okay with it. So my plan, I think, with what's left of it is to hammer out what I can and try to just build myself an interesting little Volkswagen out of that car. So you give me all the suggestions you want. And thank you for the words you said about what I had to say about the things I was feeling last week. I appreciate that. I feel there's too many of us living in echo chambers right now. And the tribalism is at an all-time high. And I don't think any of those things are solutions to our problems. I think unification. I think if we can ever get these tribalized communities to start talking to each other and realize we're all getting screwed, by God, then nothing will be able to stop us from turning things around. I don't have an answer how to make that happen. I just try to do my little part from my corner of the wrecking yard. But that is what I believe. All right, let's unbox this thing. I'm so, for her to get excited makes me think it's going to be something really, really cool. I don't even know who it's from yet. All right, it says other side up. Be careful. Do not remove this foam top before reading the enclosed unpacking instructions. Otherwise, you may accidentally break your... I can't read what that word is. It's all scratched out. 1957. What the shit? Oh. Oh, shit. There's a card. Peter H.J. Mills. Sir, this is just my way of thanking you for hours of laughter, entertainment, and thought-provoking commentaries. I saw where this style was one of your favorite pickups. Thank you, Pan and Pete. Thank you, Pete. This is... Oh, my God. Oh my God, it's so heavy. Look at this. Ladies and gentlemen, behold the finest pickup ever designed by any automobile manufacturer, in my humble opinion, is the 1957 Dodge Swepside pickup. This is the Holy Grail. This is probably the closest I will ever get to one. They did not make a lot of them. It's so heavy. It's, oh my God, it's got like a real steering system. Look, you can see the exhaust and the tailgate opens and closes. The doors open. Oh! Oh, we shitting in high cotton now. Look at that. That's fine. Oh, the hood. Oh, you can see low engine in there. Look at that. And I think the steering wheel works. You can back that thing and drive it in wherever you need it. Man, there used to be a series of books I read when I was, not a series of books, but a book I read when I was a kid. And it was about a mouse, a pet mouse, and a motorcycle, a toy motorcycle. And if the mouse made the sounds, he could drive the motorcycle. And Boy, I wish I had one of them mice right now, but boy, I'd have him drive the shit out of this 1957 Dodge Swepside pickup. That is, this is the best in my eyes. This is where form and function have collided the best they ever have to create true beauty. 19, God, look at that front end. Isn't that not gorgeous? Two-tone. We're gonna, let's put you right over here. We'll put a, oh yeah, yeah, we'll turn them wheels. There we go. And back in. Yeah, look at that. We're gonna leave the door cracked a little bit. Like you, oh, we'll pop the hood because it's the Dodge. And now look how real that looks. That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Pete. That's a beautiful gift. Thank you. Thank you. All right, let's get back into it. You know, when I was younger, I saw another movie, and I can't remember what it's called. I think maybe it's called Across the Wire or The Escape or something of that nature. But the basic storyline that I remember is it's two young people trying to escape East Berlin. And they're trying to get across the roadblock. There's a bridge going to West Berlin, and there's a roadblock, and they're trying to get to West Berlin. I don't remember what the rest of the movie's about. I just know they're trying to escape East Berlin. And him and her are in a Volkswagen Beetle, and he's driving, and they decide that no holds barred, they're just going to try to drive through the roadblock. And the German guards have, or maybe their Soviet guards have a, you know, the barbed wire and the razor wire and all that stuff. And he floors this little Volkswagen and he runs through that barbed wire. And as the car catches the barbed wire, the little Volkswagen spins sideways and rolls several times in the bridge, but they make it to freedom. They make it away from the oppression. They get across that line to safety. And he goes to touch his girlfriend's face, or the gal's face, I don't know if she's his girlfriend, and she's bleeding and she's died from the impacts of the wreck. That car didn't have a quarter of the damage that my mother's car had. I think that girl might have just been low constitution. That car wasn't near broke up as my mama's car. I haven't spoken much about letting go, not because it isn't needed, not because it hasn't haunted me like a loose window in the night, but because it's never been a gift of mine. And yet last week, in the company of cousins and the soft familiarity of the wrecking yard with its rust and weeds and shadows of what once ran, I found myself letting go of more than I thought possible. I let go of things I can't fix. Things I have carried until my hands are calloused and useless. And I knew, though I had known all along, that they belonged not in me, but out there, amongst the iron bones and the twisted frames of that patch of land. That's what the wrecking yard is for. A home for what once was alive and ain't anymore. A place where beauty hides under ruin if you know how to squint at it. And so I traveled back to Houston, the load lighter, though the road was the same. Though the miles had not changed, though only I was different. I was emptied out, spent in a way that took rest to cure. I didn't make much content this week. I didn't shape words into laughter. I just turned it all over in my chest like a socket wrench on a nut that's already tight, or you just be sure one more time to feel the resistance again. I left the things there I could not fix, and there they will remain. Until time itself bends to me or I bend to time, until fixing no longer matters, until the rust either eats them whole or I find them again with new hands. But I did not leave empty. I carried away the love I found there. I stuffed it into the hollows where the emptiness has lived too long. And though it doesn't fill the space exactly, the edges do not meet, I found the shape of it enough to make me feel whole again. My mother's car is ruined, a body broken in ways that no man would pay to mend. But it'll live again with me. Every dent I beat out will feel like a confession whispered and forgiveness granted, metal ringing against hammer like church bells. Every creased piece of steel, a reminder that value is not written in blue books. It's written in blood, in memory, in hands that refuse to let go, people that refuse to give up. No one else would want it. Literally no one else wants it. But to me, it is beyond price. And maybe that is what love always is. Worthless to the world, priceless to the one who holds it. And I reckon you too have things that need letting go. The quiet enemies, the threads that tug at your tapestry when you aren't watching. Just waiting for some still moment to unravel you. Sometimes they're cruel. More often, they're indifferent. It's indifference that cuts the deepest. It leaves scars that thicken and itch like an old wound you scratch until you bleed again. But here's the truth I've stumbled on. When you replace indifference with love, when you trade the silence for the remaining voices of those who hold you dear, letting go does not feel like loss anymore. It felt like freedom. You have love here from all of us. And if you have something too broken to carry, lay it down here. This yard can hold it. It has held worse. The wrecking yard is not just a grave. It's a waiting room for resurrection. And sometimes if fortune bends your way, you will come back to what you left behind and find it changed. Find it glowing with life again. Find a phoenix rising from under the pine canopy, shaking off the dust, dragging itself back to your daylight. I am rooting for you. I mean that in the marrow deep way of a man who has carried too much. I'm rooting for you. If you need to let go of something tonight, set it down. Turn your back on it. Walk away long enough to find yourself whole again. I'm JW, and I love you. I included another little film for you guys here at the end, and it's as we were driving away from the wrecking yard and driving up the little road that I would walk to school at the Leverage Chapel School, and I had Rachel film this video from the dash of the car as we drove up, and I drove into the school parking lot, and I wanted to see it, and there'll be a place where you can see it looks like a tunnel that goes under the road. And that's exactly what that was when I was a child. That was a tunnel that went under the road. And on the other side, there was a little store where we would go and get snacks and candy bars and such.
In the shadows of the old yard, a red bug waits in quiet still. Memories of her driving far echo softly, tired and thrill. From rust and dreams I bring you back, restore the light, fight within the cracks. Through the rust and fading pine, you see a laughter in the sun. He chants a story that profanes. In my heart our journey's just begun. With every brush I'll breathe a life, polished dreams strong weathered past. Together we'll repair the strife as echoes of our love hold fast. With every turn of the wheel, I whispers of a spirit world guide me clear through gravel roads and the laughter of days. In the gentle hum, her love says a bass. In the quiet hum of summer nights, I listen close to laughter's refrain. Each rev of the engine sparks new sights as I bring her back to life again. Through the echoes of the winding roads, with every mile her spirit sings. Restoration's more than just a code, sealing hearts and remembering. And each rusted bolt lies story untold, but summer drives and dreams made bold. And on the wheel, the wind in our hair, through the echoes of time, I still feel her there.